Hi, it's Kate Brownfield from ADHDKidsCanThrive.com. Thank you for listening. My guest today is Amy Padgett. She is a trauma-informed coach and an elementary school teacher. She understands trauma from a personal perspective, as she too is a trauma survivor. For a while, she thought she had ADHD. She shares with us today so many insights on how trauma and ADHD mirror each other, how to navigate the differences between the two, and ways which we can support our kids and ourselves. Please enjoy this conversation. Okay, so let's just start from the beginning. And can you share with us, you have a personal journey of thinking you had ADHD, but it actually was trauma. So can you share with us that journey?
Yeah, for sure. And thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I, you know, like most people had done really well and had, you know, adopted a lot of strategies. And so ADHD was never really brought up until I was an adult. And then I really started to struggle. And sometimes women are diagnosed later in life with ADHD. And I was really struggling with, I couldn't self-regulate. I was really disorganized. I just was, couldn't keep on top of things. I felt really, really overwhelmed. And I just, my house, I couldn't keep my house clean. And there were so many things that it was just this complete dysregulation. And so when it was said, well, perhaps you have ADHD. And, you know, as I read about it, I'm like, oh yes, this totally makes sense, right? I have all these symptoms that are so ADHD-like. You know, I was really restless. I couldn't self-regulate. I couldn't keep myself on track. And the key thing that I was missing, though, is that I hadn't acknowledged my trauma. So I had a lot of trauma from my childhood. You know, my brother had died and I had witnessed that as a child. And, you know, there were some other traumas that had happened. And so when I began to acknowledge my trauma, then it was thought, you know, then I was diagnosed with PTSD. And so it's very
interesting. So you had these traumatic events as a child, but you were able to get through your childhood, which is primarily like getting through school and friends. Those are like the two major things.
I mean, obviously looking back, there were signs, right? I had like really intrusive nightmares and really kind of lived with that hypervigilance all the time. But I had developed a lot of strategies so that I was able to cope.
Yeah. Okay.
And, you know, I hadn't really acknowledged all of my trauma with my parents either. So there was an unawareness from them to everything that I was dealing with. And I also think, you know, things have changed. You know, that was a long time ago too, right? And, you know, we're more aware now.
Yes.
You know, so things have changed. And you know, ADHD and PTSD often go together. So if you have ADHD and then you experience a traumatic event, you are more likely to develop PTSD, right? Where you can... Not everybody develops PTSD. So some people can experience a traumatic event and not develop PTSD. But if you have ADHD, then you're more likely to develop PTSD.
Okay. And are ADHD people more apt to experience something traumatic?
Well, there is talk about that too, because, you know, as someone who has ADHD or someone who has PTSD, there is that element of victimization. Right. So you could possibly, you know, experience things differently.
Right. And put yourself in maybe more dangerous situations.
Yeah.
Not on purpose, but find yourself into.
Right. Right.
If you're impulsive or not thinking through things, not reading the room necessarily, that you could find yourself in those kind of situations.
Definitely. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So Amy, through all of this, you've become a trauma coach. Is that what led you into trauma coaching?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my own, you know, kind of healing with trauma, I was like, oh, this is, you know, there's so much need for this. And so as a trauma coach, I work with people who have experienced trauma. You know, I'm not a therapist, so I don't treat trauma, and we don't really look at the trauma per se. Like in the past, we really focus on the here and now. And so, because trauma really impedes our relationships and, you know, how we interact with the world, And then it can impede our goals too. So it's really about how can we work through the lens of trauma and learn to self-regulate and learn to connect to your body and, you know, meet the goals that you need to meet.
By looking through the present versus the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is really focused trauma coaching is looking at where you are.
It's looking today. Yeah, definitely. We don't really go back into the past. We can't change what happened, but trauma certainly follows us into the present and, you know, shows up in lots of ways, you know, that are very similar to ADHD, kind of that hypervigilance all the time, you know, worrying, you know, about things around you, being unable to self-regulate, you know, sometimes feeling lost in conversation and not able to follow.
Yeah.
But a lot times that's out of service of protection, right? Because as someone who has experienced trauma, there's this thought that I really need to be on high alert all the time. I need to keep myself safe. And so I can't really concentrate too much on what's going on around me.
Right. Okay. So if you do trauma coaching, that's kind of saying, this is who I am today. And this is how I kind of learn skills.
Yeah,
to be definitely more regulated. Is that what trauma coaching is?
Yeah. So it's really looking at, you know, yes, we definitely develop skills to get us through. And a lot of trauma survivors have amazing skills. You know, I had amazing skills and they worked really well for me for a really long time until they didn't.
Okay.
Right. And then things really fell apart for me. Right. You know, I was physically sick, really sick. My body was just like screaming at me. I had these huge blisters on the soles of my feet, the palms of my hands, and my lips. And I couldn't really walk and I couldn't do things physically, but I also mentally was just not engaging with the world, you know, which would, you know, in a typical way.
Okay. So how did you get saved and turn your health and your life around?
Well, I did a lot of things, right? I think, you know, just really get understanding what trauma is, right? Because for a long time, I didn't even acknowledge that I had trauma. And so then it was like, okay, acknowledging that I have trauma and really understanding that so many of my responses were a result of trauma. And yeah. So really just kind of wrapping my brain around that. And then I tried a lot of different things. You know, I worked with a lot of therapists. I did a lot of natural things as well. And I also worked with a trauma coach. And I found that to be really beneficial.
Yeah. Okay. So what kind of things will a trauma coach do that like a therapist wouldn't?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we really, it's all very client-centered, you know? So at the beginning, what are your goals? What do you want to get out of this together? Where do you want to go? And then we work with those. Okay. And then it's about connecting to your body, right? Because trauma really is stored within the body. And somatically, you know, there's so much that comes up. And I feel like for me, my body was speaking to me.
Yeah. With all the blisters. Yeah.
Right.
Like screaming and really, for help.
You know, yeah. Cry for help. Kind of saying like, you know, Amy, you haven't acknowledged all these wounds and it's time for you to acknowledge them. And so really connecting to your body. And then I'm a breathwork coach as well. So I do a lot of breath work one-on-one with clients, which is an excellent way to regulate your nervous system.
Yeah.
And then I also host breath work group sessions too.
Oh, great. Okay. That's a way to connect the body and the mind, the trauma and the attention.
It's a great way to self-regulate. And I do it with a lot of kids at school too. So I do a lot of, you know, at school we do breath work and we talk about our nervous system and, you know, kids are really honest. You know, kids will say, well, you know, I've taught them about your parasympathetic nervous system and your sympathetic nervous system. And I would say ADHD kids are really living in that sympathetic state.
Yeah. Okay. What is that exactly? For those of us who don't know.
Yeah. So the parasympathetic state is kind of your rest and digest state. And then your sympathetic state is that fight or flight state.
Yeah,
you know, okay. Kind of agitated and aroused. And that is kind of the state that a lot of ADHD kids live in often, right? And so it's making the parasympathetic familiar.
And you do that through breathing and the breath mm-hmm. work.
Yeah. And so you can do that through breath work.
Oh, interesting. Gosh, yeah. I wish all schools would do that.
I know. Yeah. And the kids love it. And there's so many like tools, you know, we talk about adding tools to your toolbox and this is another tool. And, you know, first of all, knowing what each state feels like in your body.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we first start, a lot of kids are like, well, I don't know what it feels like to be calm.
Yes. That's the ADHD kid, right?
Yeah, totally.
And they just don't know how to feel calm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we talk about, you know what, that's okay. The biggest thing for me is compassion, and there's never any judgment, right? And I say that to the kids all the time. There's no judgment here. There's just compassion, and you know, you can share whatever, and they're very, very open in sharing. And, you know, I say, well, your nervous system has to learn to be calm. And I feel like over time they're like, oh yeah.
Yeah. You know, they can get that. So in the classroom, do you do that every day? Cause I'm sure you have ADHD kids in your classroom, right?
Yeah, we do. So I am a phys ed teacher as well as I'm the librarian. So I teach drama and dance in the library. So on days when I'm in the library, we do a lot of breathing, and in phys ed, not as much. Sometimes I will do before they go back to class because they're in really heightened state, yeah. Right? So sometimes we will do just 5 minutes at the end of class, breathwork activity to kind of calm their nervous system.
Okay, that's great. They're lucky to have you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Amy, talk to us about the word trauma, because I feel like kind of the culture right now is if you're having a hard time in life, it might be rooted in some sort of trauma. So I feel like it's almost getting overused. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like it's getting wrapped up with the word ADHD too. So can you help clarify for us, mm-hmm. like when should a parent, so this is about parents who have ADHD kids. So if you have a child with ADHD, when should parents be concerned about maybe getting a trauma coach or doing things more trauma-based versus ADHD or supporting both? Like, mm-hmm. help us understand all of this.
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I think, you know, my response to that is trauma overused or was it underused in the past, right? Because I think, you know, the fact that we're talking about it and the fact that trauma is so mainstream is a good thing, right? Because, you know, I think about my experiences as a child, they were very traumatic. And if someone had recognized that as trauma, then I would have been able to heal at a younger age. So, you know, a traumatic event is two people can experience the same thing and one person can respond as if, you know, it's very upsetting and another person may not. So what's traumatic for one may not be for another. And the other big thing too is that as trauma survivors, we often minimize our experience, right? So there's a big minimization of, you know, what happened to me wasn't that bad. And so if we are to say, you know, well, that isn't trauma, who am I to say that when that's someone's personal experience? So I think it's really important to look at, you know, trauma is based on what happened, but it's also what didn't happen and what should have happened, right? So how people responded around you, I think that's a big thing too. You know, yeah. If you experience trauma as a child and you have a really supportive family and really supportive connections, then it's your response is not going to be as strong as someone who doesn't have those things.
Right.
And so I think it's a really, you know, it's a really hard question to answer.
Yeah. And I agree. And I think some kids, I just think some humans are more sensitive than others. They're mm-hmm. more, they feel things more deeply.
Definitely. Right.
Which I think the ADHD kids who struggle with like learning and attention, I feel like are just wired more. They're the sensitive souls, right, of society. So they may feel things a little bit differently.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's why there's such a connection between ADHD and PTSD, right? Because those ADHD kids are going to feel things so much deeper, you know?
And so there's a connection then to the PTSD. If mm-hmm. you have ADHD.
Yeah. So there's been studies that have found that if you have ADHD, you're more prone, if you experience trauma, to develop PTSD.
Okay. And another reason, mm-hmm. as a person in a family, right? If you have somebody who is struggling with attention and mm-hmm. then they have trauma, mm-hmm. to pay attention to the PTSD, right? Because that's linked. Is that what you're saying? Like it's
yeah.
It's a real thing,
you're more susceptible, right? You're more susceptible to PTSD. in the event of trauma if you have ADHD.
Yeah. It's very complex.
It is very complex, and they very much mirror each other, right? And so that's why for me, it was like, oh yeah, that this makes sense.
Yeah. I really like all the things that I found Amy on Twitter, which I'll put her Twitter handle below, but just a lot of things that you say are very related to trauma, but also have this sense related to people who are growing up with ADHD as well. Mm-hmm. So it does feel very, very connected.
You know, I would say they're both like neurodivergent, right? They're not typical. It's not the typical way of interacting with the world and engaging with other people.
Right.
Right. And so there's that connection, but also the dysregulated nervous system, right? ADHD people and people with trauma or PTSD also have a very dysregulated nervous system.
Right. Right. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the dysregulated nervous system, I guess, is probably one of the hardest parts of ADHD, right? Is learning how to create, finding this like regulation and get through the world, right? The daily world. Yeah. So let's talk about, I think you talked a little bit on this, but how trauma coaching could support a person with ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
You suggest like, I guess like when you're looking for therapists, should you also be looking for someone? If you sense your child has ADHD and maybe processing some trauma as well,
mm-hmm.
like, is it recommended to maybe find someone who can work on both pieces at the same time?
I mean, I think that would be beneficial, right? Because people who understand trauma, there's a lot of therapists who are not trauma-informed.
Right.
And so understanding trauma and understanding how it shows up is really important because they're going to be able to understand you better. You know, I went to some people who just didn't really understand trauma. And with trauma comes a lot of shame, right? Yeah. And I think that also shows up with ADHD, right? There's shame because I'm not, quote, normal,
right?
You know, and so it's really important for anybody that you're working with to come from that lens of compassion.
Right.
I would say that is the biggest thing.
Piece of looking for support. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And then you're a teacher by day and trauma coach by night,
yes,
so to speak.
Yeah.
Okay. And so do you have any other, the breath work I think is huge as a teacher who's working with kids who are in the classroom who have ADHD, tools and strategies that may work for those kids when they're in the classroom? Kind of strategies should parents be seeking and educators who listen to this podcast as well, right? What are some tools that they can use to help those kids regulate better in the classroom?
So I think, you know, school is often the first place where ADHD is brought to the parents' attention, right?
Right.
Because a lot of parents just don't know, or if they only have one child, then there's nothing to compare it to, right? So school is the first place where, you know, teachers kind of say, well, you know, bring in parents and say, you know, we're noticing, you know, these things. And so I think the most important thing is, again, no shame, compassion, you know, greeting parents with compassion and also greeting the child with compassion. You know, I always say to kids, there's nothing wrong with you. You just learn differently. So we need to figure out what works for you. What, you know, how can we help you to be successful? You know, because a lot of parents also are going to think, oh, there's something wrong with my child. It's my fault. And so compassion is so important. So I would say that is the foundation of everything, you know, greeting parents that way, but also children. And, you know, I guess just really thinking that there is not just one way to learn and one way to experience learning. So, you know, especially like, so when we're on the carpet, not everybody has to sit on the carpet when I'm teaching. Because that doesn't work for some kids. If I'm going to put a kid on the carpet, that may be like too overstimulating for them and they may not be successful. So if they want to go sit somewhere else, that's totally fine. I also have a set of clipboards on the carpet. And so you can grab a clipboard and you can draw or doodle while I'm teaching because there's still listening, right? Yeah. there's this misconception that if they're doing other things, they're not absorbing what I'm teaching, but they really are.
Yeah.
Right. So just having those tools in place for them. And I also have fidget tools. And so I use the language fidget tools, not fidget toys. Right. Because language is important.
Interesting. Yes. Okay.
So this is a tool to help you be successful. So before I even, you know, say, oh, these are the tools, or me just handing a kid a tool and saying, oh, I think you should use this, I have about 30 of them. I leave them out on a table. And it's an invitation for learning. So anybody can go to that table and they can explore and get curious about the fidget tools and determine which one works best for them.
Okay.
And so it's really having that, you know, they have some say in what tools work for them. And then we come back and we talk about, okay, there's a lot of tools in here. Which ones would be best for carpet time? And which ones would not be, and why? And so the kids are really, you know, they're saying, well, this one's really noisy. I don't think it would be good because it could, you know, you might not hear Miss Padgett, or you might not hear, you know, or you might distract the other kids. So the kids are really involved in it.
And do you find that they embrace it more because you're making
it
part of the classroom?
And there's no, like, it's not like, you know, you can have a fidget toy and you can't. It's, you know, who needs it?
Right.
They're there for you if you need them.
Yeah, that's great. Your classroom is so lucky.
Yeah.
Right? Because you get it and you're just embracing it. Yeah. It for everybody. Right? Because even if you're not even ADHD or whatever, I think most people would benefit from a fidget tool on occasion, right? If you're tired, even if you're just tired or having a bad day or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the other thing too is there's more than one way to learn, right? So in the library, I have a lot of learning invitations. And so kids can go to them at their own pace and go to where they want to learn. And there's a lot of, you know, painting and art and creative expression. And so many kids with ADHD are really, really creative.
Yeah.
And so they may not be able to show me their learning on pen and paper as I, you know, just go sit there and show me this, but they can show it to me in a different way. And so if they can show me that they get what I'm talking about, then great. If you can show me learning in a different way, then that's amazing.
Yeah. Gosh, Amy, that's so great. Okay. So let's talk about parents and what parenting can do, what parents can do to be supportive. And I'm going to kind of, I saw a tweet that you posted that really kind of hit home for why I appreciate everything that you're talking about, is that you talked about in your own personal experience, how you kind of parented from a place of control. Mm-hmm. To make yourself feel safe, maybe your family feel safe. And I think as parents of ADHD kids, we definitely get into this place of feeling like our advocacy is more of a trying to control everything, mm-hmm. right? So our kids are more supported, they fit in, they're not failing, right? So tell us how.
Yeah.
Parents who are trying to like get our kids through life, which is primarily school, with their self-esteem intact, without feeling like you have to control everything, and to make it more of a safe, connecting mm-hmm. life. Do you have the magical answer?
Well, I think, you know, it's that awareness piece, right?
Yeah.
I really wasn't aware that I was overly controlling. For me, that comes from my own trauma, right? I really wanted to control my kids because I felt like I was keeping them safe, because I had seen, you know, my brother died tragically. I had seen what happens if you weren't under control, right? Like, that's how I had internalized it.
Yeah.
And so there was this, I'm going to keep them under control all the time. But then I realized that my kids were really pushing back and pushing kind of away from me. And it was like, you know, then it was that awareness piece, like, oh, am I controlling or am I connecting? And so really discerning between the two. And as I kind of released back on the control, I was able to connect with my kids better. And, you know, kids co-regulate with the adults in your life. You know, with the adults in their life. Sorry. So my kids were co-regulating with me, and I was really dysregulated for a long time. And so, you know, they were picking up on that. And then in turn, they were dysregulated. So I think, you know, the biggest thing as parents is to learn to self-regulate.
Yeah.
right? Because when we're regulated and when we're calm, then our kids are going to pick up on that.
Yeah.
So when there's that, oh my gosh, my kid is really misbehaving. I'm being judged by all these people. You know, then you're in that heightened state and your kids are going to pick up on that and they're right. going to respond accordingly. And so again, it comes back to that compassion piece and, you know, just giving myself compassion. And, you know, for me, it was, why am I doing this? I'm doing this because I want to keep them safe, but that's not really what's happening.
And right? that's the dance, right? Mm-hmm. That's the greatest yeah. lesson I feel like of parenting, especially yeah. kids who are dysregulated. Through mm-hmm. the ADD, right? Just yeah. learning to stay regulated when they're not. And really that's what helps them be regulated.
Yeah. You know, and the adults in their life too, right? The same thing goes for the teachers, right? It's really important that staff are, you know, I think about that in my own staff. So I offer breathwork classes to the staff after school, just as an opportunity to just kind of calm your nervous system and offer yes. them tools so that they, you know, can understand.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cause I feel like teachers are really having a hard time too right now.
Right. And kids pick right. up on that. So yep. it's really, really important that, you know, if the adults in children's lives are calm and regulated, then it's going to be easier for them.
Okay. So here was my question. What strategies can parents use on themselves to create more calm versus stress within themselves? And it's really learning as a parent how to self-regulate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Through breathwork.
Breathwork is huge, right? And learning to identify where my nervous system was sitting, right? For a long time, I lived most of my life in a sympathetic state. And so that felt really, really normal for me. And so when I first started breathwork and I was, you know, kind of dipping my toe into that calm state, I was like, whoa. This does not feel safe, right? And so it's like the gradually getting yourself there and gradually embracing it and, you know, knowing where you're sitting. So there's a really easy test you can do. I do it to kids and I see like kids going around the school doing this and I see staff doing it too. So you just hold your hand up and exhale through your nose onto your hand. So exhale 3 times.
Okay. So she has her hand right below her lips. Like yeah. your lower lip, right? Or right in front of your
lip? Right below your nose. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Then just exhale and then see which nostril is more dominant. Is it your left or your right? So exhale through your nose. And then you don't need to tell me. So just, you know, for you, which one? And then if it's your left, then you're in a parasympathetic state. If it's your right, you're in a sympathetic state. And so
which state do we want to be in?
Well, there is no bad state, right? Okay. We need both states for survival.
Okay.
But if you're in a sympathetic state all the time, then your body cannot relax. So it's just that awareness piece of where is my nervous system sitting? And so when you're aware of your nervous system, it's easier to adapt and make changes, right? I think awareness is the hugest thing, you know, for anything. If you want to make change, you can't change something unless you're aware of it.
Right.
So, you know, knowing where your nervous system is sitting and then what works for you, you know, breath work really works for me. That allows me to calm my body. And, you know, it's really understanding like 3 breaths can really reset your nervous system. But, you know, inhale, always using your nose. I always say your mouth is for eating. Your nose is for breathing.
Oh, yeah. So it doesn't count if you breathe. I feel like people breathe, you take a deep breath in and then you breathe out through your mouth. But yeah. Do you really want to try to learn to breathe out through your nose as well?
Yeah. So really, because that is activating your parasympathetic, that calm state. And so even just, you know, as parents, if you see something, you know, we are so in tune with our kids and we respond based on, you know, so if there's some sort of impulsive behavior that your ADHD child is doing, a lot of times that comes out as shame for parents.
Right.
Right. And so it's just taking that moment to take 3 breaths in and out through your nose and really, you know, saying, I need to greet myself with compassion. And I need to greet my child with compassion.
Okay, so I think you might have summarized this, but do you have any other words of wisdom for parents who are raising ADHD kids?
Well, I mean, I believe that as parents, we all do the best that we can, you know, with what we know. And it's just, you know, really that awareness piece is huge. And I think safety is the foundation of everything as well, right? And we find cues of safety on the outside, but safeness is felt on the inside. And so we need to feel safe as parents, but our children need to feel safe as well, right? And not judged and not shamed. You know, again, there is nothing wrong with them. They just learn differently. And so how can we as parents help them be successful with those differences?
That is the journey.